Hi, it's Diane. Great to be back with you. On my mind this Tuesday, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi says she has no plans to move forward with impeachment proceedings against President Trump. But in the wake of the release of Special Counsel Robert Mueller's full report, Pelosi's position is far from having consensus within her own party, with some Democrats saying impeachment is the only way to hold the president accountable for what Mueller's team found, 10 instances of possible obstruction of justice. So, what's the way forward? And how politically risky is impeachment? And what about censure? Karen Tumulty, Washington Post columnist, explains what she thinks. Karen Tumulty, it's great to see you again.
Great to be here.
So now that the Mueller report is out, Democrats are now faced with this question of to impeach or not to impeach. Tell us what the thinking is and who is going which way.
Well, there are a lot of people, particularly in the activist left of the Democratic Party, who say that impeachment is a constitutional duty that is given to Congress and that the circumstances warrant it. And I think any reading of Special Counsel Mueller's report would suggest that there were a lot of grounds there for obstruction of justice.
Have you read the whole thing?
I have read a lot of it.
Okay.
And including down into the footnotes. You know, I think a lot of us went into it thinking that kind of the original sin was going to be the sin from which all others grew was going to be the firing of James Comey as FBI director in early 2017. If you read it, the special counsel comes to a different decision, that the far more serious offense legally came a month later when the president asked Don McGahn, his White House counsel, to fire the special counsel himself. Now, the reason that Mueller and his team make this argument is that they say that when the president fired Comey, the FBI director, he had been assured by Comey himself that he personally was not under investigation, so that the motive for potential obstruction of justice was not there. But 3 days before he asks his White House counsel to fire Mueller, the president learns through a report in the Washington Post that, in fact, the investigation has taken a different turn and that he personally is in jeopardy. McGahn refuses to carry that out, describes it as an inflection point. And the special counsel also says that marks a whole new phase of the president's behavior.
So McGahn kept his own notes about that meeting with the president. The president was not happy to learn that McGahn had kept those notes and apparently testified for, what, some 30 hours before the special counsel.
That's right. There's one of the more interesting scenes in the special counsel's report comes when the president confronts Don McGahn over these notes. And he says, why do you always take these notes? And McGahn says, it's because I'm a real lawyer. And the president says, well, I've had plenty of good lawyers in the past. Roy Cohn never took notes. Now, he's speaking of his own previous attorney. One of the most notorious figures in American legal history is Roy Cohn, an attorney who got disbarred. But this is what the president thinks that ideal legal representation looks like. And that's setting aside the fact that the White House counsel is really not there as the president's personal attorney. He is there to represent the presidency, not the president.
So the Democrats are clearly divided. You've got Nancy Pelosi saying and maybe hedging a little bit. I don't know. It kind of sounds that way. But Nancy Pelosi says our job now should not be to go after throwing out the president. Our job should be governing the country as best we can. Whereas you've got people like Elizabeth Warren and Kamala Harris both saying it's time for impeachment.
Well, it's interesting that you're hearing voices from presidential candidates and from the Senate saying impeach. Nancy Pelosi is the Speaker of the House. She is the person who would actually have to carry this out. And she feels not only is it important for them to stay focused on why and the issues that got them their majority in the House, but she also believes that there are ways to get to the truth that do not involve impeachment proceedings.
Such as?
At this point, there are no fewer than 6 separate committees in the House that are looking into various aspects of this presidency and this president's conduct in office.
To what extent are Democrats and Republicans looking back at Bill Clinton's impeachment?
I think both parties are very much looking at this, and it is a big reason for Nancy Pelosi's reluctance to go forward with impeachment proceedings. A couple of reasons. One is that anybody who was alive during 1998 and early 1999 recalls that this, once the gears started grinding toward impeachment, it was like it was impossible to stop, and it completely overwhelmed every other order of business in Washington. Now, if this were 2017 instead of 2019, or if this were Donald Trump's second term, and you believe that there was truly, you know, an act of breaking the law here, it might make a little more sense, I think, to Nancy Pelosi. But right now, we are 18 months away from the next presidential election. The impeachment proceedings most likely would take all the oxygen out of everything else for the next year. We are so close to the American people themselves being able to say whether they think Donald Trump is fit to remain in office, and also whether they weigh what he has to offer against what the Democrats have to offer.
And you've been out and about the country talking to people. How much do they think about, care about, worry about impeachment?
You know, last year during the midterm elections, the Democratic candidates, particularly those in those swing districts, would say Russia would almost never come up. And I've been out with probably 7 or 8 of the presidential candidates. And when people ask them questions, it's about what's going on in their own lives, their health care, their student loan debt, their ability to get a job, their children's abilities to get a job. It was interesting, too, that over this first weekend after the Mueller report came out, Amy Klobuchar said that she got something like 4 questions about the Mueller report as opposed to dozens and dozens of questions about health care.
So people are really still concerned about the issues on which the Democrats ran in 2018 and took the House.
Very much so, very much so. And then there's potentially, and I'll be really interested in seeing the polling that comes out over the next few weeks. In the details, there was a lot in the Mueller report that was felt new, that, you know, just being able to see in a granular way what the behavior was like behind the scenes in the White House. But I think the broad outlines of what he described were something that the American people kind of felt like they knew. And so there's a real question of whether any of this changes anybody's minds about Donald Trump, and I doubt that it does.
Of course, Donald Trump has his own version, which he has been sending out on Twitter and saying publicly that everything in the Mueller report just completely exonerates him of any wrongdoing. And that message surely is getting through to his base.
Well, we certainly have this extraordinary circumstance where before the report itself was released, the Attorney General and the Deputy Attorney General got up and did a presentation where they essentially put their own spin on the ball. The president's been going back and forth on this. I mean, it's like half of his tweets claim he was exonerated and the other half, you know, trash the special counsel. He can't quite decide. What we hear in our reporting is that he's got a lot of frustration that he is expressing behind the scenes because the reception of this report is not as the total exoneration that he describes. And they say very specifically in the report, not on the question of so-called collusion with Russia. They clearly found no evidence of criminal conspiracy with Russia. But the special counsel is quite explicit that he is not exonerating the president on the possibly criminal aspect of this, which is obstruction of justice.
Now, what can we discern is the actual feeling in the White House now?
You know, as we are speaking, we're in a morning where there have been, the president has blasted out a dozen tweets that are going all over the place. I think that he is feeling very frustrated, but also this is kind of what we see of Donald Trump when he is under pressure. He just sort of bounces all over the place from topic to topic. He watches television obsessively. He reacts to everything he hears on cable news. We are seeing sort of classically Donald Trump feeling a lot of pressure.
And now a quick break. When we come back, more from Karen Temelke.
DCS Daily.
DCS Daily.
DCS Daily.
It's news,
culture, and curiosities.
From the District, Tacoma Park,
Alexandria,
Friendship Heights,
Hyattsville,
Falls Church,
Northeast Washington, D.C., in your inbox every weekday afternoon.
DCS Daily.
Sign up at dcs.com/newsletter.
dcs.com/newsletter.
And we're back. Here's the rest of my conversation with Karen Temelke. She's Washington Post columnist covering national politics. Two questions. First, do you expect that Mueller will testify? And number two, what more could we learn about the Mueller report from Mr. Mueller himself?
There are a couple of questions here. For one thing, on this report did have a lot of redactions. So the first thing Congress is trying to do is to get the full report as opposed to the report with all the blacking out of it. But I think that Mueller will testify. And what the members of Congress are going to be probably most interested in were this weighing of did a crime actually occur. He says at the beginning of the report, it was almost preordained that he wasn't going to recommend charges against the president because there is a legal opinion within the Justice Department that the president cannot be indicted while in office. Because of that, the special counsel said it wouldn't be fair to lodge charges against him and then have him have no way to defend himself from them. But I think that members of Congress will press him very much in once he goes into these hearings about, yes, but where do you think, what side of the scale did this, do you think obstruction did happen or did you think it didn't, you know, regardless of whether you could actually bring charges against the president?
And what about Attorney General Barr?
He essentially also just sort of cut off any avenue that might lead to any kind of prosecution of the president, and he did use his power to exonerate him. He said, in his view, no obstruction of justice occurred.
So saying that sort of set the tone for how that report was going to be received by the Trump base. Doesn't that stick in their minds, no matter what else comes out?
Absolutely. And the Trump base has been one of the really remarkable, you know, political phenomena of the Trump presidency is how loyal his base is. And it was almost preordained that when he declared that he was exonerated, that his base would accept that.
I can't help but wonder why that Trump base is so loyal when Trump has not delivered on so many of the promises he's made. Is it that they think it's Congress's fault that he has not delivered? Is it that they believe at some point he will deliver? What is it that keeps them so loyal?
Well, in talking to Trump voters, have been struck by a couple of things. One is that a lot of the aspects of President Trump's character that have driven his disapproval ratings so high are the very things that people in his base like about him. They like that he won't be pushed around. They feel like they've been pushed around and this guy isn't going to be pushed around. I find it very rare that somebody will say, I'm supporting him because I want protectionist trade policies, or I'm supporting him because of the tax cut. The other thing is that he has done such an effective job with his base of demonizing his opponents and convincing the people who support him that the reason that things don't happen is because Washington is controlled by a deep state, that the Democrats are inherently corrupt, that instead of investigating him, they should be investigating Hillary Clinton. And he has managed to sort of keep them on board in part because they do feel like they're on a life raft with him almost and, you know, surrounded by enemies.
So how will this, if you will, struggle between Democrats on the far left and those more moderate Democrats, how is that going to play out? How are they going to work through this?
Nancy Pelosi, I think, is pretty determined that impeachment is not going to happen. And barring some new aspect of this, barring some new information or some new development on the part of the president's behavior, I think that's where she is. The Speaker of the House has an extraordinary amount of power. She has much more power over the institution, say, than Mitch McConnell, the majority leader of the Senate, does. It's just the way that it's built. So she's going to, I think, try to let off a lot of steam through these six separate House committees that are all empowered to investigate various aspects of the Trump presidency. One idea that I, in my capacity now as an opinion columnist, that think is probably worth at least considering is potentially a censure vote of the president. This sounds like a purely symbolic act, but the fact is it has happened very, very rarely in American history. Andrew Jackson was the last president and the only president really to be successfully censured by either House of Congress.
And why was he censured?
This was a very complicated dispute over him vetoing legislation regarding a national bank and then withholding documents from Congress. There have been three other presidents where they have gotten censure resolutions as far as the House or the Senate floor. All of those kind of were watered down or failed. The reason I think that this in many ways would be a preferable avenue, and not just for political reasons, but I think for the good of the country, is that it would put members of the House, because it would just take a majority vote in the House, on record, not on the question of should Donald Trump be thrown out of office. That would get nowhere in the Senate. but it would put them on record as saying, do you or do you not approve of Donald Trump's behavior in office? And I think that that would give everyone a chance to sort of pick a side here. I think it would be a very difficult vote for a lot of Republicans, especially ones who are running in swing seats in areas that Hillary Clinton did well, because they would have to choose between saying, yes, I condone this behavior, in which case they could alienate a lot of their swing voters, or no, I don't, at which case they infuriate the president and his base.
So tell me the process toward censure.
We've often heard censure used in cases where the House or the Senate is censuring its own members. In the case of a president, what could happen is that it could go through the committee process very much like an impeachment proceedings. You could have the committee hearings. You could have the fact-finding that would go into this. And then it would be brought to the floor and just put to a majority vote.
Would there be a resolution?
It would be a resolution. Again, it would be more of a sense of the Congress. You could have language in the resolution that would call for the president's resignation. It does not have the force of law, but I think it does have the benefit of making it very clear what side of this question everybody is on.
So would that start in the House and then move to the Senate?
I think, as with impeachment, I doubt that this would get anywhere in the Senate. But the thing about a censure resolution is that either House could do it on a majority vote.
Either House could do it.
Either House. And again, this is something that has happened very, very rarely in American history.
Have you heard any representatives speak of this?
There was a conference call Monday night among the House Democrats, and several of them, at least according to the reporting that of this call that has come out, have raised this as something the House should perhaps consider. We talked earlier about the lessons of 1998, the last time a president was impeached. In August of 1998, polls were showing that public sentiment was very much on the side of censuring President Clinton, that the public had sort of had enough of this. They did want to see him admonished for this, but they did want to move on. And in fact, there was an organization called Move On that was born out arguing that he should be censured and move on. The Republicans decided to reject that. And I think in retrospect, a lot of them regretted it. Instead of picking up seats in that year's midterm election, they lost 5 seats. Newt Gingrich lost his job as speaker as a result of what the public really viewed as an overreach on impeachment. But again, it just sort of showed that once those gears start grinding toward impeachment, it's really very, very hard to put the brakes on them.
Does there have to be cause stated for censure as there would for impeachment?
A censure resolution, if it were drafted well, would in fact sort of lay out the case against the president. And it, again, could potentially come down on he should resign, or it wouldn't have to have that language. What we've seen in the past, and the reason that Andrew Jackson was the only president ever formally censured, is that there's a lot of pressure then to sort of water it down. But it is a true debate over the nature of the president's actions and whether they warrant some kind of rebuke. And again, people who are talking about impeachment seem to forget that impeachment does not remove the president from office. You know, this would go nowhere in Mitch McConnell's Senate should the House vote to impeach him. Come November of 2020, Donald Trump would still be in office whether he gets impeached or not.
What are you hearing from members of the House in regard to the possibility of censure?
I don't see that there's any huge groundswell for it at this point, but should the passions for some kind of punishment grow, and there is certainly a lot of sentiment for that, this may be kind of a third way out for them. We just are going to have to watch how this unrolls over the next weeks, even months. We are going to have to hear from Special Counsel Mueller. We are likely to hear from former White House Counsel Don McGahn, who was such an important figure in the Special Counsel's report. All of this remains in the weeks ahead of us.
It's going to be, it seems to me, very tough for Democrats if they do nothing.
It is certainly going to be very tough for Democrats who are coming from very liberal districts. The Democrats who come from the swing districts, and again, these are Nancy Pelosi's majority makers, say that their sense that they are getting from their voters is they really do want to just sort of move on to other stuff. I think there's a real kind of difference between the sentiments of the Democratic base right now and some of the people who are representing areas that are not this heavily Democratic.
But how much time, effort, energy, money would a movement towards censure take up, and what could be lost in that process as opposed to moving forward on healthcare, moving forward on other issues?
I think that one benefit of censure is that you could probably get there much more quickly than impeachment, just because the potential consequences are lower for the president. That would really be the decision of both Nancy Pelosi and the committee chairman, committee chairwoman most involved. The other thing that Pelosi brought up about impeachment is that once you have done this, if you are in the House, if new information comes up, a new development, some new potential, something that could change people's minds, that you've already acted, you know, you really can't do anything more. Whereas if she just keeps her committees going, her six committees performing their constitutionally mandated oversight jobs, they can continue to push forward and push forward.
How much support does she have right now?
I think she has a lot of support. I think that as much as a lot of Democrats had reservations about her serving another term as Speaker, they thought the party needed a new face. Her abilities to navigate through the government shutdown, her instincts on so many things have proven – she's just proven herself so sure-footed that a lot of Democrats across the country have developed, I think, a lot of confidence in her that maybe they didn't have even as recently as last year when the Republicans were trying to make her public enemy number one during the midterm election campaign.
Karen Temelty, thank you.
It's so great to see you, Diane.
And that's all for today. I'd love to hear your reactions. Find us on Facebook and Twitter. Send us an email, drpodcast@wamu.org. You can find all our podcasts and even old Diane Rehm shows at dianerehm.org. Our theme music is composed by Jim Brunberg and Ben Landsberg of Wonderly. The show is produced by Rebecca Kaufman and Allison Brody. Our engineers this week are Douglas Bell and Natalie Yurev-Levker. I'll be back with you on Friday. Thanks for listening. I'm Diane Rehm.